Hey there, and welcome to episode number 163 of Marvel by the Month, the podcast that takes you through the history of Marvel Comics one month at a time. This is also episode number 2 of our new podcast within a podcast, Monster by the Month. Count them. 1, 2. 2 episodes of Monster by the Month. The stories that we'll be discussing all saw print in the spring and summer of 1971. The scariest seasons of all, if you, like my co-host, have acute allergies to everything that grows in nature. I will be one of your horror hosts for the evening. My name is Brain, in a jar, Stratton.
I'm Rob Toombs.
And tonight, assuming you're listening to this at night, we're going to take you on an adventure into fear, from the Tower of Shadows to the Chamber of Darkness, where creatures roam on the loose and monsters dwell on the prowl. And tonight, again, assuming you're listening to this at night, we are joined by a pair of our pack brothers from the Werewolf by Night podcast. Would you ghoul lunatics like to introduce yourselves?
I'm Jacob Balcom.
And I'm Bat Howell.
There we go. Yes.
I'm Matt.
Yes. Welcome. I figured that putting you on the spot and having you come up with spooky names at a moment's notice was maybe the scariest thing that we could do. So welcome, Werewolf by Night podcast, one of our very favorite comics podcasts. You are a part of the Portland Marvel podcast mafia. Yes. You're in the 4 or 5 families or however many we have here. Yeah. Your first season, you covered Werewolf by Night, the character, the series. The second season, you covered Man-Wolf. So, fellas, my first question is, can you please explain to our listeners the difference between a werewolf by night and a man-wolf?
Jacob? Well, Werewolf by Night debuted in the issue that we're going to be talking about today, Marvel Spotlight number 2, and its character named Jack Russell. He is a teenager. We figure that the origin, how they came up with Werewolf by Night, it says that Stan kind of came up with the idea, which means that he probably cornered Roy in an elevator and just went, werewolves!
Yep, that's
and,
it.
And then
plotting credit.
Yeah, and then plotting credit that. And then Roy did just a tiny bit more work. He said that he really enjoyed the 1957 movie, I Was a Teenage Werewolf, with Michael Landon. So that made him be like, okay, he has to be a teenager. He wanted a first person. He originally titled the comic I, Werewolf. And then what has happened before and will happen again is that he goes to a maybe still basically teenage Jerry Conway and says, here, you do all the hard work. And then, yeah, Jerry Conway comes up with this character named Jack Russell. And I think it's funny that in interviews, neither Roy Thomas nor Jerry Conway will take credit for naming him Jack Russell.
Credit.
So good,
I bet
though.
It's credit. take the responsibility of coming up with Jack Russell.
Take the responsibility, but neither of them will, which is hilarious. And so, yeah, that in our first season, yeah, we covered the entire run of the comic. And then on our second season, we talked about John Jameson, who became the Man-Wolf. And totally different. Just like Morbius is a science vampire, John Jameson and Man-Wolf is a science werewolf. Mm-hmm. There's no supernatural stuff involved. He found a rock on the moon that he really liked, and it attached itself to him, and he became a werewolf. And so, yeah, we've been going through his appearances in our second season, which we just finished up. The greatest thing about Man-Wolf is that he transitioned into a character called the Star God. Which is, I highly recommend everyone going and reading every appearance of the Star God, because it is unreal. Matt, how would you describe the Star God?
I mean, the Star God is David Kraft saying, I have had this kind of Robert E. Howard thing going in the back of my mind from high school. And I want to inject it somewhere, and I'm stuck with this werewolf story. So I'll just fuse the two together. And he sent the werewolf into another dimension to save the world in this Flash Gordon kind of sword and sorcery place where he is essentially the stone that is fused to his chest is the essence of a god. And he is the god in this realm. And he has seemingly nigh untoppable powers.
It's so crazy. It's just
too short.
Yeah. And this is the same John Jameson that Spider-Man rescued in Amazing Spider-Man number one.
He's
J. Jonah Jameson's kid.
Yeah. I mean, you know, one of the first characters in, the actual Marvel comics. Yeah, it's hilarious. I'm just amazed that they let David Kraft do this, and I'm so happy because his run, and you know, we fell in love with it because I don't think either of us had really read a whole lot about the Star God. A lot of it wasn't really available until very recently. Mm-hmm. Like they just kind of within the last 4 or 5 years, I think, collected all the Man-Wolf stories. And before that, you would have to have gotten the Marvel Spotlight, you know, and or the
Creatures 37.
Yeah, Creatures 37, a lot of the kind of obscure issues to read Kraft. And a very young, some of his very first comic work of George Perez.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So it's just, it's so good. And everyone should read it. It's a blast.
Yeah. You can see George blowing up month to month. Just. Yeah.
So is this 80s? What was the Star God?
The Star God thing happened after the fact. So he was the title character on Creatures on the Loose for about 7-8 issues. Mm-hmm. And it got axed right when he was going to space and this whole adventure was starting. And then 3 years later in Marvel
premiere,
they let David Kraft and George Perez wrap it up with 2 issues of, it's like cramming Star Wars into 28 pages.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And you guys were nice enough to invite me on an episode where we talked. It was a pre-Star God Man-Wolf story, but I think it was George Perez's second full-length comic. And it was fantastic. I had such a great time. So if you haven't checked out the Werewolf by Night podcast, I recommend, like, if you like what we do, you will love what these guys do, because you go very much into detail on, like, you go one issue at a time and it is literally like a page by page thing. Like, I love the thoroughness and the smarts that you bring to it.
Well, thank you.
He brings the smarts. Both try and just, kind of riff on it. Really. We're not riff like, right. I mean, you had Elliot Kalin on. I'm not going to pretend to be that guy. But I mean, like, we definitely have observations. We love the work deeply and passionately.
Yeah.
But we're not above ribbing it a little bit here and there. But it's definitely love to dissect it and go through it and just kind of share our thoughts as we pre-read and as we're reading it again together. So
yeah,
and find that it's actually like that we started this during COVID.
Yeah.
In summer of 2020, it was just kind of, I threw out a thing just saying, here's my omnibus. Do anybody want to do a podcast? And mm-hmm. Jacob finally messaged me and said, so when are we doing this? And I was like, let's do it. And it was just therapy for us. So we would just be in a shitty mood and doom scrolling through Twitter. And then it was time to read a Bronze Age comic and talked to Jacob on the phone, and mm-hmm. we were always happy, and people actually started listening to it, and it keeps growing and growing. We've like doubled in size between the end of season one and the end of season two. So it's wild.
Excellent.
It's very cool. I feel like that was kind of how this show was for us during COVID times, where it was like, well, if nothing else, at least I know on Wednesday I'm going to be able to hang out and virtually and talk with Rob about comics for 2 hours.
Yeah, so. We're too goal-oriented to just hang out, you know, very often.
Well, we're all middle-aged men. We need an excuse to hang out.
We need an actual excuse.
Exactly. Like,
and I don't bowl.
Yeah, and they're killing all the bowling alleys anyway, so
Yep.
Yeah, so thankfully my wife's supportive, and I get this time.
That's so great. So you just wrapped up the second season with Man-Wolf. What is on tap for the third? Are there more Marvel lycanthropes out there that I am not aware of? Or are you revealing your plans?
No, you know Rain, but we're not going to do her.
Right? No.
So our name is Werewolf by Night Podcast. People and I thought it was strange we did Man-Wolf for season two, but we just want a little break from Jack. And now we're going back to Jack for season three and doing all of his solo appearances post-cancellation. So season three actually starts this week with Spider-Woman number 6. And we just jump around to some Iron Man, Hulk. So it's kind of a good season if you're not sure you want to commit to a Jack Russell whole run. You can just hear like, well, I like Spider-Woman, or I like, you know, the Spider-Man, or I like Ghost Rider. So you can just jump in and check out an issue where he kind of pops around and is a guest.
Nice.
Then we're changing. After that, we're rebranding.
So we're going to do his Jack Russell's chronological appearances after the Werewolf by Night. Mm-hmm. Title itself had folded, and we're going How deep into the 90s are we going? Not deep.
No, like 90.
90. Like,
yeah. We're going to get a Cap Wolf appearance at some point, right?
Yeah. The 90s is lava. It's kind of our mission statement.
Yeah, that's our mission statement is the 90s is lava. I know you guys have a suicide pact about 90s
we
comics.
Do. Yeah. Yep.
So we're all on the same page in this room.
Yeah, my hope is that it'll be like an event horizon that the closer we get to it, we'll just find excuses to take, 6 weeks to talk about each month of Marvel.
Right. Well, if we try to cover all of the publishing, you know, it really will. Unless we have four podcasts with other people, you know.
Yeah. I've tried to dip my toe in the pool of 90s stuff with like Jack Russell, and everyone looks like Lorenzo Lamas.
Yeah.
Everyone needs a shave, everyone has a toothpick and mirrored sunglasses and a mullet. And just like I can't do it.
Yeah. Although this I think that is kind of Jamie's sweet spot. That's like his nostalgic.
That's where he really got into
it. Yeah.
Yes.
Because he's a couple years younger than us, so I think, maybe we'll just turn the show over to him. We'll come back like when Bendis shows up.
Totally. I think that's the point when we both kind of bailed and we're like, who's this Dan Clowes guy? What's Mad Men all about?
Yeah, I think we all kind of gave up on mainstream comics at around the same time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm sorry Jamie can't join us. I was excited to have him on here, but what I did make for you guys, I'm a good guest. I like to bring gifts. So I made each of you a pack of buttons made from real Werewolf by Night comics.
Thank you so much.
So because one of my favorite things to do is destroy comics. And so I take old issues of Werewolf by Night, got myself a button maker, and I love to just cut up comics and make buttons. So
these are excellent.
Thank you very much.
Leave the crappiest one for Jamie.
Yeah. Don't give Jamie the good ones.
But Jamie, you have a gift waiting for you.
Exactly. Yes. He's on vacation, so you take your chances.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cry me a river, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Well, guys, we are super excited to talk about not only the first appearance of The Werewolf by Night. We're also going to be talking about the debut of everyone's favorite living vampire meme. We're going to cover the second half of his first appearance. So picking up where we left off with Elliot Kalin a few episodes ago. We're also going to cover a story that originally saw print in 1960, but was reprinted around this time. And it introduced one of the few pre-Marvel Age characters to make the transition into the Marvel Universe. It was recently featured prominently in one of Marvel's best modern horror comics. Mm-hmm. So looking forward to that. Our Patreon subscribers who have pledged their support to the show at patreon.com/MarvelByTheMonth are going to get to hear all of those deep dives and more in the extended version of this episode. But I think right now let's take a quick break so y'all can go and get yourself, a blood slurry or something to sip on. And when we return, we will talk about the Marvel Monsters of spring and summer 1971 right here on Monster by the Month. Rob, that cloud that was obscuring the full moon has passed. And I feel the change coming on. We are transforming into shills for one of Marvel Comics' 1971 advertisers. I'm almost afraid to ask, but who's our sponsor this week?
Invite your friends over for a haunting.
Okay, we did that. They're here, and now we're recording a podcast.
Just imagine how scared your friends will be when you flip out the light and they start hearing creepy sounds like a creaking door, chains rattling, and then a man's voice telling them that the house is haunted and they are to die one by one.
Do you actually want me to get up and do this, or?
They'll be scared stiff when they hear footsteps coming across the floor, the sound of people fighting, glass breaking, hideous laughter, terrible shrieks and screams, eerie moaning, and then more footsteps, more screams. Each person in the room will think that he is going to be the next victim.
Okay, so I'm a little confused. What are we selling here? Just like the general idea of terror?
This long playing 7-inch, 33 1/3 RPM special haunted house sound effect record can be yours for only $1 plus 25 cents for postage and handling.
Okay, I get it now. So I guess thanks to this spooky record for sponsoring this week's episode of Marvel by the Month. We're also supported each and every week by our patrons who subscribe at patreon.com/marvelbythemonth. Our Patreon supporters are the ones who make it possible for us to make Marvel by the Month week in and week out.
Don't be afraid of missing out on the best parts of Monster by the Month. Support us for just $4 a month for the extended versions of every episode.
Every single episode this season, including this one, has an extended version with deep dives and more of your favorite guests that you don't get in the public feed. And here's the really important part. Every one of you who supports us at patreon.com/marvelbythemonth is helping to make this show happen, period. So thanks to all our patrons for your support. We could not do this without you, and we wouldn't want to. If you'd like to support what we do here and help ensure we can keep doing it, please head to patreon.com/marvelbythemonth and sign up today. All right, before we dig deep into our main issues this month, let's quickly cover off on a few other short stories in a segment we call Monster by the Minute. So each of us is going to get 1 minute to cover one story. Once that minute is up, we're going to move on to the next issue. Jacob and Matt have accepted the Monster by the Minute challenge, so they will also share in the fun tonight. Now, several of these were published before the Marvel Age of Comics began in August of 1961. They were reprinted in comics that came out in spring and summer of 1971. A lot of them, the writers were not credited, which usually means that Stan Lee contributed a very brief plot idea. The artist broke down the storytelling, Stan scripted the finished product, and that's that. So, Rob, we're going to start with you.
Oh, boy.
You're going to do this one because I have a T-shirt with this character on it. So that's why I chose it. But it's a
it's not an insult to my size.
Yes, yeah. It is. It is also an insult to your size. It is Gigantus, the monster that walked like a man. this is from Where Monsters Dwell, number 10, art by Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko. It was originally published in 1960 in Journey into Mystery, number 63. You've got 60 seconds on the clock. Are you ready?
So, whatever.
Okay, go for it.
All right. So we get a splash page of a giant orange wrestling creature, the Black Lagoon Beast, and then we meet a advertising display shop owner who is building a dinosaur to promote a science fiction movie. And then we find out that this giant actually has appeared at the coast. It says it comes from a race of people that live on the bottom of the ocean, and they are going to take over the world. So it's about to do that when it meets an even bigger giant that it appears in the ocean. This is after some time. And so then it gets scared and goes back to the ocean floor. It turns out that the even bigger giant was made by the advertising display shop guy in his greatest feat ever.
Wow. you get another 15 seconds if you just want to vamp.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things I liked is that this is a very polite monster. He doesn't really want to hurt anyone.
Right. Yeah. He hates cities, too. He's like, I don't have any use for these. We'll knock them down and build something cool. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
There's something I love about, these Atlas era comics where, like, everyone has to retreat to the mountains where it's not, they don't want to get stomped on by the fish people, the fish monsters. And they literally, it's just that CSA, like, it will be hard living in the mountains, but that is how we will survive. Yeah. I love when people talk like that in comics. And I love that he wears pants.
Yes.
So he's got a fish penis.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Or maybe he could be.
Yeah. Fish. Or she. Yeah. Sorry, I'm not trying to.
Could be a big cloaca of some sort. I don't know.
Cloaca. My daughter has a beta, and I don't know what's going on down there. Yeah. He is a goldfish, though, clearly.
He is.
So right. You could flush him. He's got to build, that guy should have built a big toilet.
Yeah. Well, and once again, an advertising executive saves the day. Truly the yeah. heroes of our society.
Every time.
Yep. Ooh. Yeah. Okay. Well, I am going to walk through a story that, boy, I did read, and now I'm having a hard time remembering any details of it. So we'll see how this goes. This thematically appropriate is Where Walks the Werewolf from Creatures on the Loose, number 13. This is one of the, I think the only, story that we're going to cover in Monster by the Minute that was written and drawn originally. So it's a brand new story. It was written by Len Wein. The art is by, Reed Crandall. So I'm giving myself 60 seconds, and they begin right now. So we start out. There's two hunters in the woods. One's got a dog. They are, I don't know, they're looking for something. They're looking for a wolf, there apparently. Yes. And they wind up, what are they doing? They need to take a serum from the wolf, right?
They need spinal fluid.
Spinal fluid from the wolf. That's right. So they see the wolf. They shoot the wolf. They take the spinal fluid to cure the guy's blindness or something.
Yep. Yes, Martin.
Got it.
He's an artist.
Nailed it.
Can't lose his eyes.
That's right. And so they perform the operation, but he still needs to like keep his eyes under wraps for another several weeks. In the meantime, his friend who did the operation hooks up with his girlfriend. He turns into a werewolf, and then there's some monster action. He winds up throwing himself accidentally off of a cliff, and the guy who ran off with his girlfriend lives happily ever after.
I don't know that he ran off with her. I think they had a relationship and he got more jealous once he was werewolfed.
I felt that was very adult. Like it was. I like his explanation. He's like, we just fell in love. It happens all the time.
Yeah. Right. Yep. He's like, you stole her. He's like, no, she stopped loving you, man.
Exactly. You can tell this one was written in the 70s.
Yes, totally.
It really was. It's so modern.
And I really liked this guy. I wish this guy would come back as kind of a villain. He's like an artist awesome. Who has werewolf spinal fluid and werewolf retinas.
Yeah,
how bad transplanted, and he turns into a werewolf with his own mind, and it's kind of driven him mad.
Yeah,
he has a lot of potential.
It's a cool science werewolf.
Super cool.
He could take over the art world.
Yes,
he totally could.
Yeah. But and it's only for people who can see like reflective things.
Yeah,
with their art. It's really built in that way.
Yeah. Different part of the visual sphere that we can't see, but it's all just kind of like wolf porn. So
yeah,
probably for the best.
Exactly.
I was so excited to see Reed Crandall. I mean, you know, who is such an amazing artist. I was most familiar with his EC Comics work.
Yep.
But I think his first credit is on Captain America 2. I think he's an inker like over Kirby's pencils back in 1940, whatever. Like he's as classic of a golden age artist as you can get. So and how
that's,
cool.
That's what I really love about a lot of these monster stories is that the new work that they're producing at this time, they're putting very young, inexperienced creators on, and they're also putting guys who are like at the very end of their career on. Mm-hmm. So it's like they're just so you get this really cool dynamic of super experienced veterans working with the new kids on the block. And sometimes it turns out great. And sometimes it's just really silly and that's fine too. But but yeah. And Len Wein, I think he's like what? It's like 6 or 12 months away from working on Swamp Thing.
Yeah. Right? He's real close.
He's very, very close. So and then, of course, you know, a few years later, does a few other interesting things for Marvel.
Yeah.
Heard of him.
Changing the direction of the company. So,
yeah.
Okay. So the next story we're going to go through is I Turned Into a Martian, which I chose because it's the name of a Misfits song. Jacob, Matt, who would like to take this one?
I'm ready with this. Got my physical copy and everything.
Awesome. Ooh, okay, Jacob, you have 60 seconds on the clock. I should give the credits here. This is I Turned Into a Martian from Fear Number 4. The art is by Steve Ditko, originally published in 1960 in Journey into Mystery Number 60. 60 seconds and go.
So we open on a really great splash page. We see from behind, it's a man who's, half man, half Martian. It says, for the startling story, read on. And it opens with a man who is the first man to walk on Mars. He is walking around in a t-shirt and jeans, as you do when you're on Mars. And he is attacked by a monster. He runs back to his ship. He thinks he's safe. He blasts off, but realizes that the monster has made it onto the ship with him. This monster looks kind of like Man-Thing with like sad rabbit ears. And he, the Martian changes, switches personalities with him. They, his plan is to go back and, of course, invade Earth, and the man is powerless in this Martian body. They land on Earth. The man with the Martian consciousness runs out to a crowded spaceport and just starts wildly firing. A lady says, he's gone space crazy, and then the cops shoot and kill him.
Wow.
I love space crazy. I love space anything.
Yeah. Oh, And it's because the human who's trapped in the Martian body was like he was projecting his thoughts.
Yes.
Like
He knew that the alien could, the Martian could read his mind. So he thought, oh, I hope he doesn't run out there and just attack everyone because he'll conquer Earth in like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, aha. Runs out and gets gunned down immediately by gun crazy Americans.
Yep. God bless him. Uh-huh. It's the secret strength of this great nation.
But this guy is adorable. I want a doll of this guy.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You had that dead to rights there. Big floppy rabbit ears with like a miniaturized man thing trunk. He's adorable.
Right. Mm-hmm. So good.
I can't stay mad at him.
Even if he did try to conquer our world.
Come here, you Martian.
Aww. Okay, Matt, so we'll have you go through the last story. What lurks on Channel X from Fear Number 5, art by Jack Kirby and Dick Ayers. This one was originally published in 1961 in Journey into Mystery Number 73. I think this wound up being the title of a Rob Zombie song.
It is.
It is, yes. Yeah. Okay. That's why it stood out to me. So you have 60 seconds, and they begin now.
Okay, what works on Channel X starts with a beautiful splash page of Ditko morphing weird dolly faces with a TV screen in the foreground. We meet a couple in New York City. Their husband has brought home a puppy to his wife, but they can't have puppies in their apartment. And their mean old landlord comes in and says, "You can't have puppies here." And then a strange man comes and brings them a weird looking television set and says, "You're a new test audience. You can try this TV out." They turn it on. Weird alien faces show up and they're hypnotized. And the husband had put out an aerial to get a stronger signal to this television set. And then all of a sudden, he and his wife snap out and they're like, "Whoa, we were being hypnotized. What was going on there?" And they come to find out that the landlord saw an aerial that was not authorized. He snipped it, and that's what broke the hypnotism. And the aliens realize somebody got unhypnotized. We cannot conquer Earth. Let's just go home.
Yeah.
The end.
Yeah. And again, the day saved by a fussy landlord. Yep. So
advertising agents and landlords.
The heroes.
Yeah. The true heroes and gun-toting Americans.
I also love these guys in their walk-up, you know, I assume in New York with just a full axe in the apartment, like, so that they can kill the TV with it. But I'm like, what's the axe for?
Yeah, there's Sid and Nancy kind of vibe to this couple.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
And I love like these, like the 60s suspense and horror stories, like you get the paranoia of the other, you know, like all the Cold War anxieties. There's anxiety about what TV is doing to our culture. Mm-hmm. It's like Douglas Wolk, we've said this several times, but like one of my favorite things that he says in his book, All of the Marvels, is that, you know, these things were never meant to be enduring works of art. But when you go back and look at them, what they're really good for is giving you a very accurate read on what the times were like.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And just like, you don't have to scratch the surface at all to figure out like what folks were concerned about then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Horror has always been a mirror to society's anxieties, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this stuff's great for that.
Yep.
This, that splash page, I want a black light poster.
I love that.
Yes. So good.
The way the television set is portrayed over these just grotesque melting faces is just like a very pop art outline, like a peach pink color, and then little dials. It's just something about it is complete art, pop art.
Yeah, so, yeah. I totally agree.
And it's a Kirby piece, which like when I first looked at that, I had it in my head that this is a Ditko story, and then like, yeah, you turn the page, it's like, oh no, this is clearly Kirby.
Yeah.
But it's Kirby inked by Dick Ayers, right?
Yeah.
And it's such a different it's such a different beast than Joe Sinnott, and especially for the Atlas era stuff. Yep. I love Kirby being inked by Dick Ayers.
Me too.
It's so good.
Yeah, but I totally agree. I thought this was Ditko when I first pulled this up. I was like, that physicality of that way of depicting people in that distorted way is very Ditko.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Marvel by the Month. Let's talk about Marvel Spotlight number 2, Werewolf by Night.
Hey, I know that guy.
Yeah. It's ringing some bells here. Written by Jerry Conway, art by Mike Ploog. Matt and Jacob, we're going to lean on your expertise here since you've spent an awful lot of time with Werewolf by Night. What can you tell us about how the character came to be?
Yeah, well, like I was saying at the top of the show, you know, it was kind of a combo of Stan, Roy, and Jerry, and they kind of brought in Mike Ploog to do character design. And this is one of Ploog's very first comic credits, if not his first Marvel comic credit, a major story. Mm-hmm. And Ploog kind of is, he's an interesting guy. Like he did a couple stories for Warren. And before that, he had worked with Will Eisner on a magazine for the Army called PS Monthly. It was Preventative Maintenance Monthly. And he basically drew like illustrations of like how to clean your M1 rifle and stuff like that. And Ploog was a Marine, so he kind of knew that stuff and was really good with detail. And so, yeah, he came from that background, came to Marvel, and this is his first major art piece for them. And it's great. It's not peak Ploog yet. Like, he's still really figuring stuff out. Mm-hmm. And even in this issue, I honestly think the art gets better by the end of the issue. It's a lot better than it was at the beginning.
Yeah,
Like Ploog learns so fast that yeah, within an issue, you can see how what giant strides he's taken art-wise. Even though, like we'll talk about, weirdly enough, the cover is by Neil Adams.
Right.
And it has nothing to do with the issue whatsoever. That guy is obviously not Jack Russell.
Right.
And all of that. And that's a good segue into what Matt and I kind of started. We started seeing these tropes in all of these Werewolf by Night issues that would happen nearly every issue. And so we came up with a drinking game. We're going to play that today. If you want to play it along at home, please feel free. So we had a contest on our show for a signature drink, and our friend Ben ended up making it and winning, and it's called the Ramita Alteration. Now, we named it this because as we were going on in our run, we would do a lot of our research on Grand Comics Database.
Yep.
And on Grand Comics Database, a lot of these covers, you would see that the art would have these things that would say, face alterations by John Romita. Now, John Romita would do a lot of alterations. He was kind of the unofficial art director for many years.
De facto.
But then I think he got the official title, I think in a couple years from now, maybe by 74 or 75. But on GCD, you'll see a lot of comic historians, you know, fight about what Romita has altered on these covers. Most of the time, it's the faces. You know, Romita likes to make people beautiful, so he'll do a lot of these alterations, which is came up for the name for our drink. And Matt, what's the ingredients to our signature drink, the Romita Alteration?
So yeah, to make a Romita Alteration, you take 1.5 ounces of rye whiskey, and you build this into a what type of glass is this? It's just a...
It's a rocks glass.
Tumbler. Yeah. So put, 1.5 ounces of rye whiskey in a rocks glass, and then 3/4 of an ounce of... We pronounce it Cynar. It's C-Y-N-A-R. It is an aperitif based made out of artichokes.
Yes.
It's a bitter aperitif liqueur. And then you put 3/4 of an ounce of sweet vermouth in there. And that's all it is. And you stir that up, and then you zest an orange. Add that in. If you have a real big, nice, old-fashioned ice cube, throw that in there as well. And we top it off with a Luxardo Maraschino cherry and a little bit of fresh ground sea salt, which is not required, but it has a very nice effect. The sea salt, as you know, melts some of the ice. Mm. So as the sea salt also gives a nice little seasoning, a little bit of like a kind of, you know...
Umami.
Yes. It gives a little umami to the drink, but it's also melting the ice cube. So by the end, it looks like craters on the moon. I don't know if you guys have noticed that in your ice cubes.
Yes.
So this was made by a listener, Ben, for season 2. It was our season 2 drink. But that's why the cherries are there. That's the moonstone that Manwolf has. But we both got addicted to them immediately, and it kind of became our drink over the last season.
Well, yeah, it's so good. And so we've made some for you guys.
Thank you so much.
We all have our Ramita alterations. And so we're going to be playing a drinking game while going through Marvel Spotlight 2. So these are some of the tropes that we found existed in nearly every issue of Werewolf by Night.
Yep.
So we're going to take a sip when the cover is misleading, when Jack forgets he's a werewolf during the full moon, every fucking issue, when there's a judo throw, when a villain dies. So Conway and later writers like Doug Mensch introduce so many villains to Werewolf by Night that immediately die at the end of the issue and are never used again in the Marvel Universe.
Wow. It's a real Marvel Cinematic Universe method.
Oh, it is. Like, it just keeps happening. So when a villain dies, Jack in his werewolf form most of the time he wants to get to the forest. Mm-hmm. Like he wants to get to the forest so he can hunt, so he can be an animal. So that happens all the time. He wants to be free. Mm-hmm. So many times in Werewolf by Night, people will be 6 inches away from the werewolf and won't realize that he's a werewolf.
They think it's a mask, or they just think he's a hobo or a hippie. Oh,
yeah. They think he's a hippie a lot. Yep. They think he's in a costume. And so that was a big one. The last main one for the Werewolf by Night run was when glass is smashed. Mm-hmm. We figured that a lot of these issues are sponsored by Big Glass.
Yeah, Big Glass. Oh, yeah.
And, and it happens so often. And so
we're
so,
saying we see you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're having a drink of whiskey when it happens.
Yeah.
Okay.
Awesome. Yeah. So we'll sip whenever any of these things happen, and it's going to happen a lot.
I love it.
Call them out. I wrote notes for this too. Yeah, that good. I'll run us through.
Okay.
And I know because I wrote these notes, I didn't note exactly these points for the drinking game, but I know about how many drinks I'm going to be having during this.
I'll just dial 9-1 and put my finger on 1.
Hover.
We're just going to have sips. We're not teenagers. Yeah. Like, we're just going to have sips, but
we're not a bunch of Jack Russells here.
No. We all have full glasses of the Remeda Alteration. So we're ready. And I know you already talked about, we talked a little bit about the cover being by Neil Adams and mm-hmm. having it having nothing to fucking do with the story. So let's drink to that.
Yes. All right. Way to get started.
Great start. Auspicious.
And should we just dive into
the story here?
Okay. The first thing we get is First Night. And that's our label. We begin with some great moody scenes of a ragged guy walking through dark alleys in LA. Lots of moody first person narration sets the tone. And he's about to get jumped by a mugger with a knife, it is revealed to be a werewolf. And those first couple panels are just beautiful. Already. Mm-hmm. It gets a little goofy as we get to the reveal, but those first ones are just, great tonally.
Yeah, I mean you can you mentioned, Jacob, that Plug came up with Will Eisner, and it's like, I mean, this is so Eisner-y.
Yeah, mm-hmm. His storytelling is so influenced by Eisner. We're going to see in later issues, a lot of the times he'll have the title of the story be built into the background, which is as big of a spirit trope as there is,
Totally.
And so, you can obviously tell that in his storytelling, it's as Eisnerian as it gets.
Yeah, nice. Heavy use of shadow.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
But it's very different than a lot of the art that we've seen at Marvel. This is a huge difference, which I think Plug sticks out in the best way.
Yeah, so, I think it's like a almost some of the light shadow hits a Steranko mode, mm-hmm. but he also has sometimes a cartoonish quality that hits like Herb Trimpe.
Very much.
So yeah. It's like a combo of those in its own way.
Yeah.
It's great.
I totally agree. My biggest takeaway with these first two pages is like, this is, it's downtown Los Angeles, literally.
Yeah.
But it's very much also like Germany, like a small German village.
It really does.
Isn't it so weird?
Yeah, I've been through some alleys in LA and I've never seen anything like this setting.
Yeah.
Which makes me wonder. It's like, I wonder if a few of these pages were done, before they really knew. It's like, okay, so what are we doing?
Where are we setting this?
A proof of concept almost,
I think the LA setting was an afterthought, honestly. Yeah. I think Mike did these first couple of pages as like proof of concept.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, damn, these are good. Let's use these.
Yeah.
Yeah. I totally think that's true. I think Jerry Conway takes credit for putting it in LA. He said too many of the Marvel stories took place in New York. And so he wanted, we've had Daredevil move over to the West Coast and other things happen here. So he wanted to add to that.
Yeah.
So this moodiness and like that you're talking about, all the shadow and stuff like that, this was so prevalent that they ended up calling this the Malibu Gothic. And
I love that term
so much.
That sounds like what should be like a, Big CW? Lebowski 2.
Oh, yeah. I would love that. Are you kidding me? Oh, my God.
Not going to stay out of Malibu.
So reactionary.
So this is I'm going to kind of tangentist for a second. This is a standing up and wearing pants kind of werewolf, just to be clear.
Yeah.
Yes.
And do you know if there are any terms, you're werewolf experts at this point, for the various types of werewolf? Like in some cases, people just straight turn into a normal sized wolf.
Yeah.
Sometimes a person sized wolf, sometimes a hairy man with pants or even a whole outfit on, or like Hulk sized bipedal werewolves, like the Underground franchise. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. These are typically pretty pedantic, but as far as like cinema goes and popular culture, this type of werewolf is typically called a wolf man.
Okay.
When you turn into a lupine form, more of a dog than biped, that's a werewolf in the classical sense, but, mm-hmm. They're interchangeable.
Gotcha. Yeah. And like you've said, the code is relaxed at this point. So they're able to use monsters in a literary tradition.
Yes. Right.
So, you know, I mean, werewolves go all the way back to the Epic of Gilgamesh. There's Greek myths, but all those are basically people turning into an actual wolf.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And werewolf literature kind of started around like the mid 1800s. There's a few stories like that. But a lot of those also are people just turning into wolves. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. I mean, I really think it came into popular culture with the Universal Monster movie.
Yeah,
honestly.
With the Lon Chaney Wolfman.
Yeah. Yeah, I know when Guy Endor's book was published, that was the basis of the werewolf of...
Werewolf of London is the first one.
That's like
actually.
That's or
yeah. That's yeah. That's in the 30s. There was actually a werewolf movie made in the teens that had a female werewolf protagonist, but it's been lost. Mm-hmm. So we don't have a whole lot of information on that. But
there is a silent film from 26 called Wolf Blood. Mm-hmm. That's about a man turning into a wolf, which we'll be watching in season 3 of our bonus.
Oh, well, awesome.
Nice. Okay. Well, that was the robust answer I was looking for. Because I'm very curious. I've been obsessed with werewolves since I was a kid.
Me too.
So I will interchangeably say wolfman or werewolf as we go, but I think of this as a sort of wolfman. So, the wolfman who is being is dealing with this mugger, gets interrupted mid-mugger maiming by a motorcycle cop. And as the creature runs off, the narration notes that the mugger is definitely dead and that the beast wants to turn around and keep on killing. So we do have this sort of, like we've talked about with the lizard, you know, this competing sort of human brain versus bestial brain, or the Hulk, whoever, you know, you want to throw that into the mix.
Sure. Again, Douglas Wilk has said the secret to Marvel Comics is superheroes, romance, and monsters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So. And now I think we should grab our glasses because the creature thinks about how it wants to be in the forest and kill things without the complication.
Third page, we drink.
But
first murder on page 2.
Yeah.
of many.
Yeah.
By the way,
I'm getting sort of used to the full-on murder that's happening in Marvel Comics now. Well,
it's a big change that happens in the early 70s. Absolutely. Like you're going to see it in Tomb of Dracula. You're going to see it. You're just like, holy shit, people just die. Like a lot of people just die. There's no coming back.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen in Terra Verde some, you know, the dictator there just send fighter planes into bombing like peasant revolts.
That's
like,
right.
Yeah. And they're just definitely dying.
Yeah.
The publisher of the Daily Bugle, his son has torn people's throats out, and we're just okay with that.
Yeah.
We're just moving on.
This is the world we live in.
It's covered up on the media.
So then we get a jump cut, and it turns out it was all a dream.
Yeah.
We see a red-haired young white guy waking up in bed and lamenting how real this repeating dream is becoming. We learn that this is the kid's birthday and he's 18, or as he thinks it, today I'm legal, a full-fledged hunk of draft bait.
Hunk of draft bait. That is some Conway dialogue there. A lot of times things that Conway writes in Werewolf by Night, you're just like, I don't think any human being has ever put those words together before.
Right. Yeah. It struck home to me. I turned 18 the day we bombed Iraq or the Kuwait, the first whatever desert storm started. That day was the day I turned 18, and I went, oh crap.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I got it. I related. Yeah. I mean, it's very of its time, you know. Yep. I mean, Vietnam may be winding down, but, you know, they just extended the draft for another 18 months. And this has been foremost on any young person's mind for at least the last decade.
Yeah. So, oh, yeah. For sure. But I don't know if any young person has referred to themselves as a full-fledged hunk of draft bait.
No.
Like, it's a weird, like, jailbait it's kind porn, of reference, porn, too. Yeah.
It's
Playgirl.
I mean, they haven't referred to themselves like that unless, you know, they were getting paid.
Yeah, so. Exactly. I mean, that makes more sense.
Mr. October.
Yeah.
Also, this teen has a little slash in his arm where the Dream Wolf got the bullet flesh wound.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is all interrupted by his mom coming in and telling him to come down to family breakfast time. And our hero, who we now know goes by Jack, talks to his sister, Lissa. And we get the info on our other key characters.
We know he wears cravats.
Yeah.
Red style. Like Hanna-Barbera. Yeah.
So we have Laura, who's Jack's loving mom, who is arguing with Grant, who is a big Brando in leather type
leather
goon.
Daddy.
Who is, he's definitely a leather daddy.
Does not appear to be wearing a shirt under his leather.
No,
coat.
No.
Why would
but
you?
But John purse. Leather yeah. John purse, no shirt.
Yeah. He's mean to Jack's mom, Laura, and apparently the chauffeur for his stepdad, who is Philip, who is smug, pipe-smoking stepdad who lords it over everybody and berates Laura.
Mm-hmm.
So already, I also liked the minute Philip came up, I looked up for Shaun of the Dead to see if they purposefully made his stepdad
interesting
Philip, but I didn't find any evidence. Yeah. I just was like, they got it. That has to be.
Is that Bill Nighy's character?
That's
Philip
cool.
Is such a stepdad name.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
Oh, isn't it?
and is it implied that he hits Jack's mom or he's just, don't he's let just, him beat it, on you it, mom but is that like
verbally I think
verbally,
but
okay.
He's like berating her and yelling at her and like menacing her.
Yeah.
He's very loose cannon, and he's very big and intimidating.
Yeah.
And Jack thinks about how he wishes he could beat up Grant, but is not strong enough. Then he heads out for a day to go to Malibu for some reason and returns. There's just one panel of him sort of driving off, and then they're like, he's back.
He's thinking about the nom.
His birthday party, and it's evening. So that was just our way to sort of get through daylight.
You want to leave a cliffhanger at the end of every page.
So as he's getting called to the cake cutting at his birthday party, he starts to freak out, yelling, something wants to get out, among other weird things. And then he runs off into the night.
Yes.
So, oh boy. I'm sure the mom just like, Jack got acid already. Mm-hmm. Like, that's all he did today was go into town, get drugs. So as he's leaving, he sees Grant doing some work on the family car in the middle of the night. And then we hit second night, and now it's werewolf time. Jack transforms down by the beach and gets the scent of something
beautifully.
Yeah.
That hand of him clutching into the sand as a fur grows on there is one of my favorite panels of the entire run.
It's real good.
And this is also, I guess this would be a moment where he's a werewolf and realizes he's a werewolf.
Yes.
Right. Does that hit one of our drinking moments? I don't know.
No. Okay. Oddly, but don't worry.
Okay.
I'm not
worried. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how common this was. Like, the idea was to call this I Werewolf.
Yeah.
And the idea was to be entirely first person narration. I don't know how common that was for the narration boxes and thought balloons to be entirely, there was going to be no third person narration. That was the pitch.
We haven't seen any of that so far.
Yeah. That was something that Stan did really well. Some of actually Stan's greatest Atlas era writing was Menace.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Menace was all first person. Yep. It was all very, very cool. So there's a little bit of a history of that, but we haven't seen a lot of that at all in the modern Marvel era.
Yeah. I feel like it definitely is a trope of like the 50s horror suspense comics of, you know, you know, the internal monologue, especially like EC Comics, where it's like the caption boxes were enormous in every panel, you know, frequently either second or first person narrations.
Yeah, but I always associate with like horror and or crime too. Like, right, like all the best noirs are kind of like you on this inevitable fatalistic track.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, I'm dragging you with me. You're going to have to see what I saw.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? Detour, you know, and so many of those.
So Jack has caught the scent of something and he seems dimly aware of what has happened to him and makes semi-coherent thoughts. That's the other thing to keep in mind is like this as a werewolf still having thoughts that are at least semi-coherent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This goes away real fast.
Yeah.
Real fast, by the way.
He becomes a werewolf grenade that that people love to throw into situations.
Yes. It's like a Hulk thing. Yeah,
yes, just it is.
Like, so the scent turns out to be a wolf that an actual wolf that is in an old abandoned mansion, which is a pretty good place for a wolfman versus wolf fight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a bunch of abandoned mansions on Palisades Park. Just outside of Malibu.
Well, not these days.
But let me tell you, there's a lot of them in Werewolf by Night.
Yeah. This could be the very same mansion that Spider-Man, it could be Kirk Connor's mansion.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Right. I know. Yeah. That's why I love the Malibu Gothic, right? It's like Little Transylvania. Yeah. Just like empty houses and castles, just
craggy hills.
So you know, spoiler, the werewolf wins this wolf werewolf fight, and we get the idea that the primal urges of survival and killing are pretty much the two tracks of the werewolf teenager brain.
Mm-hmm. So he used judo to throw that wolf over the edge of the cliff.
We drink to that.
Comes up a lot.
Deliciously drink to that. We just sort of cut to Jack being awakened on the beach by his stepdad and sister. He's just sort of laying in the surf. They take him home where he finds out that his mom almost died in a car wreck while she was out looking for him that night.
Mm-hmm. And what caused that car
Something
wreck?
Went wrong with the brakes.
Weird.
Yeah. And now she's in the hospital.
There was virtually no foreshadowing of that. No.
And I love how like much of a dick Philip is, where he's like, well, if you had been here and you hadn't run off, maybe your mom wouldn't be dying right now. Wow, he's really a stepdad.
He's such an asshole.
Just really, hitting all the notes for a stepdad.
It's also amazing that he's, I guess this is just a, you know, it's a skill that has eroded over time, but that he's able to speak so coherently and so nastily while he's got
with the pipe
in his teeth.
He just looks like he's 50s guy.
It's a real lost art.
Yeah. And so Jack is pretty exhausted from being up all night and falls asleep on the couch. And as he's falling asleep, he overhears Philip telling Grant that he'll show up at a warehouse with the money later.
Warehouse?
Yeah.
South Street House. That's warehouse.
Yeah. So Jack goes to see his mom at the hospital, where she reveals a little bit about Jack's real dad. Guess what that is?
Yeah.
He's from a small Baltic state. That's what it is.
One gets named later.
Yeah. Oh, and he was a werewolf. His dad used to lock himself away in the tower of his castle every month for 3 nights.
God, and just the art on like this whole flashback is incredible.
Yeah. So amazing. Yeah. Like, we were so excited to talk about this stuff. I mean, you know, Ploog doesn't stay on the book for very long. He's on there maybe like, 11 to 13 issues, couple fill-ins here and there, but God, his art is just astounding. We love it. Every time I look at it, it gets better.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to the Power Records version of this, but
no,
it's repurposed pretty well, but I mean, you get to hear, you know, Baron Russoff, saying like, Jacob, you're a big lad, eh?
Yeah.
Like this weird Transylvanian, like Eastern European. Yep. It's awesome.
That's pretty much the same. Yeah. The Bela Lugosi Dracula voice is what, Dr. Doom is to me too.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And he's wearing baby lederhosen. What the hell?
So his dad has locked himself away, you know, for these 3 nights until one night after Jack was born and Lissa was in, you know, a bun in the oven on the way, lightning hit this tower room, knocked a hole in the tower. And then shortly thereafter, people started getting killed in the village.
They started getting werewolfed.
Yeah. Deliciously EC ways.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's the silhouette at the bottom, the last panel on page 16.
So good. God.
And the and the panel right before it, it's like, who's no?
Ah! Yeah. It's excellent timing. Yeah, this art just is such classic horror comic art that it's beautiful that it's happening in the time. I think for a lot of the probably older readers in 1971, this is just like gold.
Yeah. Breath of fresh air, right?
And you got to figure, like, I don't know. I assume Plug, was of the age where he was probably seeing, you know, as a young child, like some left around copies of EC mags. You know, it's like, I feel like a lot of the creators who came up in the 70s, it's like, obviously they were probably a little too young to have actually purchased the EC mags when they were out, but I mean, everyone has a stack in their attic, you know, or in their camp or something like that. Right. Like, this stuff is very much in the public consciousness.
Yeah. Under their bed.
Yeah.
Among their parents.
That's what my dad said, even with like the old Marvel, like Fantastic Four. He said that he and his four brothers, who all lived in a room the size of this room growing up with bunk things, at a farm, they read the books and sort of hid them and then passed them around till everybody read them. And that was how they read the early comics.
They probably knew them by heart, right? They probably read them a dozen times.
Yeah.
So cool.
Anyway, the villagers are getting killed. So people are on the alert and people go out to hunt, and they eventually shot a werewolf with silver bullets.
Yeah.
Love that panel at the bottom of page 17 there.
Yep.
God.
Gold.
And the werewolf dies, and as it did, it turned back into Jack's dad.
Yep.
So that's how we know. Of course, I didn't, we said this earlier on, but Jack's mom returned to the States after this and then married Philip Russell.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we get our hero's name, Jack Russell.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, Jacob Russoff to Jack Russell.
Yeah. It's reassuring to know that, you know, they didn't name him Jack Russell.
Right.
Like, it was just a circumstance.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But somebody did.
Yeah.
Somebody did, but no one's going to admit who did.
No one will take credit for this. Yeah. Also, the last, the panel in the bottom of page 18, the very last panel, is like, I mean, if that could have been any more Will Eisner-y. Like,
oh,
I mean,
I know,
that's
right?
Such a spirit panel.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
the face looking out, you know, the camera's cool. Outside of the window with the rain dripping down, and you just see like the contours.
Just reading the through shadow. The glass. Yeah.
It's so good. So good. Yeah.
So at this point, Jack's been hearing this origin of his dad as a werewolf and why he's a werewolf. And he's been at the hospital all day.
That's poor planning.
Yeah,
he seems to have forgotten something.
Yep. Drink to that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Jack's mom makes him swear to never hurt his stepfather, and then she dies.
Very classic origin conflict kind of thing there. Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which makes this now at, it does, it's not labeled, which made me sad. Third night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Jack turns into the werewolf in the hospital room. Some orderly or nurse walks in and just gets to see that for a second.
Yeah.
And then, Jack jumps through a window and Big Glass makes some money.
Big Glass. Gotta drink to that. The transformation panel in the hospital is just, Plug has such a incredible way of doing these transformations. He does it different every single issue. Not one is the same. Like, they are all radically different, and they're all so artistically done and amazingly done. Like, this is where Plug really gets to shine, is during the transformations.
Yeah, and this feels like I just read all of Alan Moore's run on Swamp Thing on my vacation.
Yeah.
Good use of time.
Yeah, but some of the art, the way panels overlay, sort of montage where there's like the hair from a big close-up of the werewolf face coming up into the sort of skin of his arms as he's holding his head before he's transformed.
Yeah,
it's just
cool.
So cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I chalked this all up to Eisner. I would assume, being under his, you know, having him as a mentee.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this idea of like the fur being the background, the texture, the thing that ties all the elements of the montage together.
Yep.
Beautiful stuff, man. Like, you don't need to do that. That's going the extra mile as an artist and wanting to do something.
And people weren't doing that at Marvel, honestly. Yeah. Like, I don't think they were really allowed to. I think they had to stick to such a house style.
Yeah.
And that's why, yeah, the relaxing of the code, the starting of the monster books, it's just, it's so exciting. I've been waiting for you guys to get here. I know you've been waiting too.
Yeah.
Like, you guys have just been so patient, just being like, oh my God, shit's going to get so good.
Yeah, I will say, like, you know, end of 1968 to, like, beginning of 1971 was a little bit of a dry
start.
That's
part of, like, why Marvel by the Minute came back in so strongly, so we could just put the pedal to the metal,
right?
Get through that.
Yeah. I don't have to say high pockets ever again. I can just move on.
Yeah. There's also something psychedelic about this art too.
Yeah.
Like the only person who could get away with anything like this was Gene Colan. Gene had like some latitude to stand, so he could do some sweet stuff in Doctor Strange, and and that's, some of it feels like that too.
Very much.
Know? Yeah.
But it is. It's just great art. And I forgot, we, after he jumps through the window, we get the, he remembers, a vaguely overheard warehouse, despite his wolf brain telling him to go to a forest. So there we are again.
Drake again.
And so the werewolf goes to this warehouse and, sees Grant and immediately attacks him. No hesitation. Grant assumes that Philip didn't want to pay him the mysterious 10 grand he is owed and sent a goon in a costume to kill him.
In a costume.
Not a mask.
This is not a werewolf.
And surprising to me, Grant is definitely just holding his own.
He's kicking the shit out of him.
This is a trope that also is established here early on. Jack's young.
Yep.
He's ropey. And he's inexperienced. And he doesn't have much experience being a loose cannon. So he gets his ass whooped a lot the first year.
Conway Ploog, their version of a werewolf is very depowered. There's no really supernatural strength going on here. It's just an 18-year-old kid.
Just an Iron Maiden fan. Like, fuck you, Dad!
This isn't even like a teen wolf, being able to dunk or anything.
He can't even dunk. No, he definitely can't dunk. Like, he gets the shit kicked out of him by normal-ass guys all the time.
It's just like hyper-puberty.
He's mostly rage and a lot of, like, fronting and thinking he can take stuff.
Yep. Yeah. And then after much fighting, and I'm not sure if there's a judo toss in here, so let me know.
There's a lot of punching.
There's a lot of punching.
There's some wrestling moves.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think we're clear on that one.
We're good.
But
after 4 pages, Grant finally...
He's strangling Jack.
Like, yeah.
He finally says, that mask... It ain't a mask.
It ain't a mask.
Yeah.
In the
middle of about to win, just full on strangling the guy, realizes that this is an actual werewolf, and then gets pretty scared. Even though he was just kicking the crap out of him. So just then, so Grant runs away from our titular werewolf, and the werewolf is like, gets sort of the prey brain again and just says, it's running away, it's weak, I'm gonna pounce on it, and just quickly kills him.
Like, he just needed it.
So that's our first villain.
There you go.
Villain Grant is the first villain, and he's dead.
And then
I like the fact that, like, the fight is going Grant's way until the penny drops. It's like, wait, this is an actual werewolf.
But still, I'm seeing
these
are like
magical shoes.
Grant doesn't seem like a guy who would be like actually affected by that. He'd be like, I'm just gonna crack his neck then, and I've killed a werewolf. That's another one.
Totally.
You know, notch on the belt.
He's Chuck Connors. Like, he's not fazed by this at all.
Then Philip arrives to the warehouse to give Grant his money. He's trying to, you know, speak out loud to Grant, who he can't see, wondering where he is. He waxes on about how Laura has died, so the money is soaked in blood, so to speak. And then Jack almost jumps out to kill Philip too, but dimly remembers the promise to his mother to not harm Philip. And then Grant leaves as Jack looks on from around a dark corner. And we end with Jack Russell, boy werewolf, howling at the moon in frustration, grief, rage, as he realizes he has become a man and a wolf. Yeah.
But not a man wolf. That's a different
thing. Not a man wolf yet. Yeah. Not yet.
He can also buy lottery tickets.
Yeah.
And porn.
Yep. He can do a lot of stuff.
I think
stuff
he can
now.
Vote.
He can drink.
He can vote.
Yeah, he can drink at that point, yep. I think. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome debut. Like we were just saying, I have been waiting to get to these monster comics. They have not disappointed so far. So now we're our Legion of Monsters. We are now up to Man-Thing, Morbius, Werewolf by Night.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty
and
good
Zemnu. If we can throw him in there,
is Zemnu? Yeah, you know.
Yeah, but no, I mean, yeah, you have three of the best members of the Legion of Monsters. Well, you know, I mean, we get Ghost Rider real quick.
We'll have Ghost Rider and Dracula. Yeah. Before the end of the season. So,
I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, it's just, it's an amazing debut. Yeah. And I think, and Ploog doesn't have a ton of Marvel credits. Not like someone else who has hundreds of issues. You know, Ploog, and every one of his issues is so unique and so well done. I mean, he's just such a high caliber artist that... Yeah, I mean, it makes these early Werewolf by Night issues so great and so fun to do. And you know, there's a little more light on the character these days with rumors and all that. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm so excited. There's going to be a Marvel Masterworks that's coming out, I think, in August that collects these, I think, the first 10 issues in a nice hardcover.
Nice.
Yeah. So I'm hoping people will check that out. And we'll really just check out the first, all of the Ploog issues of Werewolf by Night. Are amazing to read.
I really hope everybody orders that Masterworks because, I mean, it's the first four issues of Marvel Spotlight and then the first six issues of his own title, all Ploog. Just gold.
Yeah, so, it's some of the best stuff that's done in early 70s Marvel by far. So I highly recommend everyone check it out.
Yeah, this is the kind of stuff that I spend my money on at this point. Like,
I'm
waiting for collections and I'm waiting for hardcovers if they're there. Of very specific things. Not quite to the level of Brian, as you could see by being in this room.
Yes.
But, I'm building my tomb.
Yes. Yeah,
I still have the old, I have all of these in a long box in my basement.
Yeah.
But I do want to read them again. So I try to be have some discretion in how I choose what I
buy. Haven't yet gotten Rob on the why don't you send your comics away to get chopped up and down train.
I was, get them there.
Yeah.
But honestly, it's the weirdest thing. Like, I know it makes no sense. Like, I have like all of you guys, like a lot of the listeners, I have boxes and boxes, long boxes of single issues. I never read them.
No, right. I don't either.
But the moment that I send them to a binder, they chop the spines off, put a hardcover on it. I read them all the time.
Yeah, yep, right. In the same way. Yeah. I've read Starbrand like six times because I just had the whole run. I was like, well, I'll get a bound. I don't care.
Wow, you really are trying to get Jim Shooter on your show.
He was definitely the sexiest character.
Oh, that's great. I am so glad you could be here for this.
Same.
Thank you. This has been a joy, and it's been we're so happy to get to the horror part of Marvel Comics.
Oh, and we've been listening to your show, for almost 2 years now, and it's just when are we gonna get to the werewolf stuff? Yeah, so
it's been a blast. I'm so glad we were to come on.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for joining us. The last thing that we do here on the show is just to share our astonishing takes. Which is our recommendations for things that our listeners might want to check out that are not necessarily the horror comics of spring and summer 1971 that were published by Marvel. I will go ahead and lead off here. Something I read recently that I would recommend is the EC Archives Piracy volume. This was one of the last of the new trend EC comics to be launched before the formation of the Comics Code Authority. So this is sort of coming at the tail end of the Weird Science, Vault of Horror, Tales from the Crypt line. And it actually survived the transition to the new direction, as they called it, which is the code approved stuff. Better than I thought it would, though you can absolutely tell, like, the visual storytelling takes a hit once the CCA starts, meddling with everything. And like the seal shows up on the covers, and it's just like very depressing to see the Comics Code Authority seal right next to the EC logo. Like, this doesn't seem right. But it's like you'll see in the art, like, you know, weapons are removed from hands in the original art. Yep. Faces are redrawn to be less grotesque. Jack Davis seems to really get neutered, his stories. But, you know, the stories themselves are more of like EC's trademark twist ending morality tales. I mean, they really just transfer the formula to, you know, another genre. And, you know, there's repetition there, like a lot of EC comics. But the art is so good. Like, if you haven't checked out the, you know, the piracy stuff, like I'm a big EC fan and I had not read it until very recently. But like Reed Crandall and Bernard Krigstein in particular really hit their stride as comics artists over the course of these 7 issues. So highly recommended for fans of 50s horror.
Nice. So I love piracy. I have the soft covers that came out, those collections that yes. came out like years ago.
Yeah.
And I love it. And I really think, I mean, that's what Alan Moore is referencing in Tales from the Black Freighter, yeah. right?
And like, that's why I thought Joe Orlando had drawn some of them, because he does spot illos yep. in that. But he doesn't draw any of the stories. So
no, but the Reed Crandall stuff. I mean, you know, we talked about him with the werewolf issue this episode, and God, Reed Crandall is so good in that.
Yep.
And for people listening who don't know the shorthand we're speaking through, the Black Freighter is sort of a subtext comic that is happening within the Watchmen by Alan Moore. So it's and Dave Gibbons. So it's a very, it's just a huge homage to this genre that we're talking about.
It's the part you skip between the Rorschach parts, bro. Dude, when Rorschach's doing stuff, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's true.
Skip
that's
all
true.
That.
No, but I was going to say, is that Dark Horse? Did they?
They have taken over the EC comic, the EC library or EC archives line.
So when did piracy come out?
In the last couple of years?
Yeah, last couple of years, I think.
Yeah.
So I kind of had the Gemstone, the aughts.
Yeah.
And so I have this weird OCD issue where it's like the trade dress doesn't match and I have a problem with the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can see like down there, those are the ones I haven't gotten to reading yet. And those are the ones that I have read. And so it's like, it looks like a messed up row of teeth.
And then there are alternate EC collections from Fantagraphics that are totally different.
Which are those. So, the black and white ones right behind.
Oh,
you,
yeah.
Jake,
those are specific ones.
The artist library.
I'm so shocked you haven't cracked Psychoanalysis yet.
the new direction, man.
Ooh,
it's
that new direction.
Me.
The kids are going to love that, right? Oh, that's going to last forever.
MD. You get into the illustrated ones, Crime Illustrated, Shock Illustrated, which is just
text.
It's all
spot
text
illos. With spot illos. Which, I almost bought some of those though, just because the illos are so good.
Mm-hmm. They are.
They're great, but you know, I got them because I have a neurosis.
I almost bought this the other day.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm saying Adult Tales of Terror.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Love it.
But Rob, what do you have to recommend to our listeners?
I am 95% sure you already recommended this because the creator and one of the writers was on the show when we watched the Punisher movie together.
Oh yes.
Who is Jordan Morris? This is a book called Bubble. It's based on a scripted podcast by Jordan and Sarah Morgan. The art's by Tony Cliff and Natalie Reese.
And Jordan and Tony were both guests on an episode that you couldn't be bothered to show up for.
Oh, yeah, I was on a vacation. it was one of the few episodes of Marvel by the Month that I listened to in its entirety. and it was this story is – it was – it's about a bubbled city surrounded by hostile alien wilderness called the Brush. Everything in the bubble is pretty much exactly like our world, except it is occasionally infested with monsters called imps.
Yeah, and inside the bubble, it's sort of like every hipstery city, like, you know, at Park Slope, Brooklyn, or Portland. Or, you know, like, yeah, it's very much a satire of that way of living.
There's even an app called Hunter for people to accept gig jobs of killing the imps if they are up for it.
Wow.
And some of the alien stuff can alter humans to have powers or become even weirder monsters.
Mm-hmm.
The satire is very high. The characters are hilariously lovable, hateable, and relatable. especially from Portland viewpoint. Yes. And I was reading this while I read Decorum, which is a dense sci-fi mind-bending Hickman universe book.
Yeah.
So this became like a delightful Buffy the Vampire style amuse-bouche that I could jump over to for murderous comedy breaks when the other was too thinky.
Yeah.
Wow. So that sounds fun.
Yeah. So it's not that Bubble is not also super smart too. It's just approachably and funny and super smart. So it's really worth it.
Yeah.
Look. And who's publishing that?
First Second.
Mm, yeah. Which has been doing a bunch of cool stuff. Like they do all the Adventure Zone graphic novels and they've been really making some quietly. They've been establishing themselves as a force. And also Bubble is up for for two Eisner Awards, which we will find out about 2 days after this episode drops. So obviously we're pulling for Jordan and Tony and everyone involved. Also Douglas with all of the Marvels.
That's right.
And Books with Pictures is up for the Spirit.
Books
of,
with Pictures.
Yeah. Oh, I saw that. How Spirit cool is that? Yeah. I mean,
so great.
You know, I know everybody already knows this, but Books with Pictures, just one of the best comic stores to have ever existed on the planet.
Love it so much.
I should say that Bubble has been, I forgot to say what year it came out, which is last year, almost when we're recording this, almost to the day. It was like the 13th of July, 2021. So it also has, it's kind of referencing the pandemic and some of the things we've been through as well. Just more of a, you know, sort of wink at
obliquely.
That.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Very much so.
Wow.
Yep. So, Matt, do you have a recommendation?
I do. Yeah. The book I'm championing right now is Barbaric from Vault Comics. I'm a huge fan of this. It's there's one trade out now called Murderable Offenses, and it's about it's very Conan-esque in the sense of there's a barbarian named Owen, and he has led a barbarian's life of doing a lot of ill, and he gets a vision that he is going to hell, and he is cursed to have to answer the call to do good or the call for help. And he has this enchanted axe named Axe, and it gets drunk on blood. He gets drunk on mead and everything else, and he's a dickhead, but he cannot not answer the call, you know, when he's a hero is needed. And so he gets drunk, and his axe is like, hey, I want to get drunk too, and let's go and just chop stuff up. And it has a very kind of Hellboy kind of just big energy, lots of demons, lots of cool monsters, and him getting thrown into these situations. And it's written by Michael Morisi, who I think is the publisher of Vault Comics, and Nathan Gooden is the artist, and it's gorgeous.
Fantastic.
Super entertaining stuff.
Wow. That was not even on my radar, but that sounds awesome.
Yeah. Not for some reason, but I thought of Gru the Wanderer at the same time as you were talking about that.
Yeah.
I was like, it's like if Gru was actually closer to Conan. No.
Yes.
Then, yeah.
Rob, we've listened to enough episodes of this. You're always thinking about Gru the Wanderer.
Yeah, that's true. I'm a mendicant. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there's lots of cussing in this. Like, it's a little more, it's bloody and it's violent. And
that's hitting all of the check boxes for me.
Yes. Yeah. please read Barbara.
It's like, oh, thank God it's got cussing.
Yeah. If nothing else, I just.
Swearing, oh, thank you.
I won't. More so people buy it so they'll make more. They're still making more, but I love it, absolutely adore it.
It's going on my buy list.
Jacob, what do you got to recommend?
Well, I'm gonna go for something mainstream from the distinguished competition.
All right, we'll
which is the new Swamp Thing run by Ram V and Mike Perkins,
really?
Which is really blowing me away. So it's almost a reboot in a way. The Green has a new avatar who's named Levi Kamei, I think is the way you pronounce it, and a man from India who has kind of deep ties to nature through his family. So the Green's chosen a new avatar, but honestly, like, the storytelling is really great, and it's cool that we get a little bit of a break from Alec Holland, which I know all of us are probably in agreement, like, I don't care. Really don't like if you're gonna make someone else a Swamp Thing, that's great. You know, I think I needed a little break, and I'm a huge Swamp Thing fan. I've pretty much read everything, I think, and obviously love the Alan Moore run more than anything, But and Ramvee is such a great writer, but the real star is Mike Perkins. Like, his art is next level, and he's been good like throughout his career, but I honestly haven't noticed a ton of stuff of his that I really liked. I think he illustrated a Lois Lane series that Rucka wrote recently, mm-hmm. which was pretty good. But this Swamp Thing, it's like he just like got into psychedelics or something, like, and it's so intense and incredible.
I can vouch. And I flipped through these pages. This stuff's wild.
I think it's the best thing that's going on at DC right now by far. Like, and cool. and coming as a lifetime Swamp Thing fan, I think it's doing the franchise totally right and taking it in a different direction, you know, staying true to all the like normal Swamp Thing beats that we all love, but with a new character and just an insanely talented artist working on it right now. So I can't recommend it enough.
Awesome.
Very cool. Well, four great recommendations, and like four great hours of podcasting.
Yes.
Matt, Jacob, thank you guys so much for joining. Thank you for entering our studio freely and of your own will. could you please let our listeners know where they can hear more of what you do?
Yeah, well, like we said earlier, we're starting our third season of the Werewolf by Night podcast. We're going to rebrand for next season after we're done with Jack Russell's appearances. But for now, we're gonna jump on our third season. We're really excited about that. Matt, I wouldn't mind plugging. I started another podcast recently with Matt's permission that is called On the Funny. It's with my friend Chris Matheson. We're talking about the history of comedy and different things that we feel are very important comedic wise. And our first season, we're talking about the On Cinema franchise that Tim Heidecker and Greg Turkington have done for about the last decade. So that's been really fun. And I think people should check that out as well.
You should.
Very cool.
Yeah. So after we do Jack Russell's solo adventures or guest starring adventures in season three, we're going to rebrand as Bronze Age Monsters. And so
Perfect.
We're kind of just nice. Lifting our restrictions, and we're just doing Bronze Age, you know, mostly monster stuff, but we want to be free to like go into Plugs and Minch's Planet of the Apes or whatever we want to do. Curtis Magazines. We really thrive in those pools, in those waters. Yeah. So. Yeah, after season three, we'll be Bronze Age Monsters.
Perfect.
I'm actually excited. Really, really excited about doing that.
Yeah. That's going to be great. Obviously, we will continue listening because...
Yeah, I've been afraid of what happens when you run out of werewolf.
Because it's a finite thing.
Yeah, right? we're in this insane premise, so we're just going to be going definitely until
we
die.
Next 30 years of content to find out for us.
There's something comforting in that. Right?
Yeah, there is.
Yeah.
So we'll be back. Season four, we will be rebranded as Bronze Age Monsters, and we'll be doing Son of Satan.
Sweet.
For our first
Can't
season.
Yeah. wait Sweet. For that.
That's what Rob has been waiting for, I think, the entire time.
That's why I put it twice in the Monster by the Month theme song.
Exactly.
Satan's Son. I slipped it up a little bit.
It was so great. We had a Patreon poll on what we should do, mm-hmm. and it was overwhelmingly Son of Satan, which nice. I was just like, wow, the people know what they want.
Yep. I like that.
We're ready to give it to them.
Sexy.
Awesome. Well, this is basically it. This is all we have for you people this week. I hope it's enough. If it's not, subscribe to our Patreon for the fantastic price of $4 a month at patreon.com/marvelbythemonth and get exclusive content. Review us on Apple Podcasts or whatever you're using to listen to us. And if you'd like some free stuff in the mail, send us a screenshot of your 5-star review to marvelbythemonth@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram at Marvel by the Month, and marvelbythemonth.com has links to our other social channels, as well as our shop. So that's it for now. My name is Brain in a Jar, Stratton.
And mine is Rob Toombs.
And we'll see you next month at a crossroads at midnight, true believers. Until then, stay safe, stay healthy, and stay inside and read comics, if you dare. We'll be right back.
So be careful not to show it. You really don't.